The debt ceiling debate continues, and the recall races in Wisconsin head into the home stretch. Those are two of the big topics during this hour on The Week in Review. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, July the 29th. We have with us two guests from different political perspectives to talk with you about the news of the week, and we welcome the stories you'd like to talk about at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Oh, and you can also tweet us on Twitter, twitter.com@Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We're happy to have with us John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And also with us, Brian Hoffman, who is professor of management at UW-River Falls and faculty advisor for the UW-River Falls College Republicans. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
Well, let us start with the debt debate. The House last night abruptly postponed a vote on John Boehner's plan, debt reduction plan, and a plan to raise the debt ceiling. But now this morning, at least, we are hearing that maybe progress was made overnight. A Republican member of the House Ways and Means Committee says he believes the GOP is very close to having enough votes to pass Speaker Boehner's plan. Are you confident this might happen, Brian Hoffman?
I think so, yeah. Last night they were only two votes short, and the new version that's being kicked around today has what's called a hard link to the balanced budget amendment, meaning it will go to the states. So that may bring some people over, and ultimately they're not talking about that much money anyway.
And what is this? So that was the holdup, was the balanced budget amendment language?
Well, there's a number of differences. I think a lot of Republicans would like to see this two-stage plan, but I think that they might be willing to give up on that in exchange for this hard link. So it's just another attempt to reach a compromise.
Well, is this going to be dead on arrival in the state or in the Senate, John Smart?
Yes, I think it's pretty clear it is. I was just going to say, I never thought that I would say that I feel kind of sorry for Speaker Boehner, but I do. They always used to say that trying to organize the Democrats was like herding cats, but he's really got a problem on his hands dealing with his Tea Party members and so forth. And as I said, it's kind of a pointless venture anyway, because it's not going to make it through the Senate, and even if it did, it would get a veto on the president's desk, but they're staying up all night doing it, so let them go.
Well, boy, John Smart, shouldn't the Senate at least try to, I don't know, make some changes to the bill so there might be some compromise?
Yeah, the Senate will make changes to the bill, no question about it. But the point is that the same bill has to be passed by both the House and the Senate in the same, you know, essentially identical, and I don't think that's ever going to happen. For one thing, as Brian just said, that they're tying the amendment, the constitutional amendment, to the bill. Well, that's not going to happen, not right away anyway. I'm not saying that there's anything necessarily wrong with the idea of that constitutional amendment, the balanced budget amendment, but I don't think this is the proper way to address it, by holding the economy of the world hostage while we try to ram that through, and I don't think that's going to make it through the Senate, no.
I wonder, Brian Hoffman, if you think that the Tea Party is holding the economy of the world hostage.
No, I don't, and here's the reason. When you look at the Boehner two-stage plan, it calls for both parties having to do this again next year, and that's an election year. Now, which party doesn't want to do that? Well, the Democrats don't want to do that. Republicans are willing to face their crazies. The Democrats are not willing to face their crazies. So it takes two to tangle. There are nutcases in the on the left. There are nutcases on the right. But the Republicans are confident that their nutcases are less nutty. So, no, it takes two to tangle. And so far, the Senate hasn't put out one bill.
And that's right, John Smart?
No, Majority Leader Harry Reid has put forth a bill, and that's already been under negotiation. And as far as the idea of postponing it for 6 months or something like that, I think that's kind of idiotic. We've seen what's happened with this debate, and I've used debate with quotation marks around it, that's been going on in the House, do we really want to go through the same thing all over again in 6 months? That's crazy.
Well, Brian Hoffman, where do you see this headed?
Well, one of the things that happens underneath the table that actually you don't see, Jim Krevick was talking about this. He's a congressman from Minnesota. He said there was an agreement ready to be made on the last bill. That's before the hard link was put in. And Harry Reid went off to the White House and was discouraged. So the problem really, problem lies in the White House. Clinton was successfully able to do this triangulation thing, and Obama's trying to make it look like he's doing triangulation, but the fact of the matter is, I think he's with the lunatic left. And I believe that Reid and Boehner will get together on a bill. Reid has been willing to walk away from Obama before, and I think he'll do it again, and I think this thing will land on Obama's desk.
Well, do you think the same thing, John Smart?
No, I don't. The lunatic left, indeed. I think that most truly liberal progressives in this country are starting to wonder whether Barack Obama is their president, too. And he is certainly not siding with them in any of this. And I think he's turning out to be a very moderate leader. And I think that he's trying to find consensus in all areas. And if the middle of the road is where most of the people are, although it was that wonderful columnist from Texas who said in the middle of the road there are only dead armadillos. But I think that pretty much you have to do that. And I think that's the direction that we're going.
We have many callers, so let's get some input from them. Mark in McHenry, Illinois, go ahead.
Good morning, Joy, and to your guests. My feeling is this, and that is that if we're faced with the possibility of a lunatic fringe in the Republican Party, and pardon me, sir, but they basically own the franchise on craziness right now. But if it appears that the lunatic fringe in the Republican Party, which will not take any kind of yes for an answer, is going to try to crash its economy, it is not only the president's option, but his responsibility as the leader of the free world to invoke the 14th Amendment and to de-link the debt ceiling issue, which has been raised something like 39 times since Ronald Reagan, from all the other discussions. Yes, we need deficit reduction. Yes, we need to close down two pointless wars and do a lot of other things to get our fiscal house in order. But before we let a bunch of crazies, frankly, who I think are treasonous, destroy this country's economy, he has to act.
All right. Well, your response first to that, Brian Hoffman?
Well, Obama's never going to go with the 14th Amendment, and the reason is, even if he was successful in doing it, there'd be a cloud hanging over the debt that was paid off. And the uncertainty in the markets would be as bad as not paying. So, forget that. Now, he has said, and Carney has said, that they're going to favor the bondholders. So their intention right now, I guess, is to pay bondholders first.
John Smart?
I disagree with Brian. I think that it's very possible that the president will be invoking the 14th Amendment. If this drags on much longer, it's going to be about the only option that he has, because it would just be too dangerous to allow us to default. And I think that I admit that there's a question about whether the 14th Amendment really carries that much weight to deal with it. But even if it's a court case that drags on for a couple of years, it still would have the immediate effect of allowing the debt ceiling to go up.
And another call from Ned in Knowlton. Hello, Ned.
Hi. I agree with the previous caller's comments, and I will just start by stating that if we take a breath and step back and look at how we got to this position, we got here because the 40th time that the Congress tried to raise the debt limit in the history of the United States since 1917, on this try, the 40th try, the first time ever, the Republicans have taken the stand that we're going to hold the entire world's economy hostage so that we get what we want now. We're not going to negotiate it later. The next point is, the main thing is, this money that the debt pays for, the debt raising pays for, has already been spent. So it's like, okay, here comes your credit card bill, and we're not going to pay it now for things we've already spent. It does not address exactly what we're going to do in the future, and that can be done later. So I think the 14th Amendment is a possibility. It's a realistic one, and one of your guests is not facing reality.
Well, you want to defend yourself, Brian Hoffman.
Yeah, the caller might ask himself, then why did the White House signal, why did Jay Carney say point blank that they're going to favor the bondholders? The obvious, I mean, the only thing you can, and actually they've even said that they're not going to do the 14th Amendment thing. So there's two pieces of evidence that they're not going to do the 14th Amendment. And as far as holding hostage, again, if the Democrats rolled over and played dead, this would go through. If the Republicans rolled over and played dead, this would go through. They're both holding the, if you want to call it hostage, if they're both holding the economy hostage, I think that's hyperbolic, but there it is.
Yeah. And John Smart, you used that same language, so I take it you agree with our caller.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. Well, how big of a disaster would it be if the debt ceiling is not raised on August 2nd. We heard on NPR News some of the Tea Party Republicans don't think it would be a catastrophe. Brian Hoffman?
Well, the fact of the matter is, I think we're kind of arguing over pennies in the end. Could they service the debt? Yes. Would there be enough money left over for entitlements? Yes. Can states get along without the money? This morning they talked about Wisconsin having enough money for 3 months, so they're not going to miss the federal money right away. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at what we're talking about, a couple of trillion, and then you look at the size of the national debt, look at unfunded obligations. It's just incredible that we're even having this discussion. It's like two people fighting over a penny.
John Smart?
Kind of lost me with that one. I'm not sure what's going to happen. Nobody knows what's going to happen. And you asked originally, Joy, what do we think the ultimate turnout of this will be? And nobody knows. And you've heard all the speculation from world economists and from world leaders and American leaders and so forth. And nobody really has a clue because it's never happened before. The United States defaults, okay, they've been talking a lot about, we've got a AAA credit rating, and maybe they'll knock it down to AA or 1A or what. Nobody really understands all this stuff. But the fact that we don't know what's going to happen, and it could be catastrophic, should be enough to cause everybody to just stop, sit back, and say, okay, we've got to at least raise the debt ceiling. Yes, everybody agrees that we need to do something about the debt and the deficit. Yes, of course we do. And yes, we've got to get out of those wars, and we've got to stop that spending. And yes, we have to revamp the tax code so that General Electric starts paying something anyway. We've got a lot of things that need to be done. But again, and I don't like using the language holding hostage very much either, but that's essentially what it amounts to. And now they're talking about a balanced budget amendment, and we're not going to do anything until we get the amendment. Well, an amendment takes several years to have happen anyway. And again, nobody knows what's going to happen if the United States defaults. So I think that's much too dangerous a territory, which is why, as I said before, I think that ultimately what will happen if this continues to drag on like it is in the Congress is that the president will indeed invoke the 14th Amendment and just simply put it in place.
Yeah.
They can argue about it afterwards.
You don't think, John Smart, there's any chance that Congress might de-link the deficit reduction talk and raising the debt ceiling talk and just pass a single bill, which I understand would just take minutes, and raise the debt ceiling?
It's entirely possible. And as we said at the beginning of this discussion, you know, the Speaker of the House no longer controls his own caucus. And if it gets to the point where nobody can pass anything, it might just be that the simplest form, and Mitch McConnell had brought this up once before, the Republican leader in the Senate, that maybe we should just pass a bill that simply says, okay, let's raise the debt ceiling. We'll go back and talk about the other stuff later. And that's entirely possible.
Now, what would be wrong with that, Brian Hoffman? Or do you think that might be a possibility?
Oh, it could, I suppose. That comment on GE, though, I want to make it comment on the fact that GE's President Immelt is heading Obama's economic advisory panel. There's a very close relationship between GE and the White House, so we don't need to lay that particular corporation at the Republican door. But I'm still maintaining the fact that the Senate is equally responsible in this issue. They can accept a deal anytime they want, as can the Republicans in the House, and I'm not sure how this becomes a Republican issue.
Well, we're going to take a short pause. We're going to continue talking about the debt ceiling debate and the political implications as well, and how this might affect the 2012 elections, as we continue reviewing the news of the week with John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party, and Brian Hoffman, professor of management at UW-River Falls and faculty advisor to the UW-River Falls College Republicans. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you'd like to participate in the program on air. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 25 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, July the 29th. Coming up after 4 today during At Issue, it's your views on the news. Join host Ben Marins when he talks with news analyst Ken Mayer and discusses your thoughts about the week's most significant news story. It's your views on the news after 4. This is The Week in Review here on the Ideas Network, where each Friday at this time we talk with two guests from different political viewpoints about the top state and national political news stories of the week. Today we have with us John Smart and Brian Hoffman, and we are talking about the debt ceiling debate and the stalemate that's going on. Let's move into the political fallout of this debate. If a compromise is reached, or if it isn't, who's hurt or help in 2012, John Smart?
That's pretty much up in the air, too. I don't think anybody really has a very good handle on that. But it seems to me, and by looking at polls and looking at recent news stories and so forth, that it's starting to look like the Republicans are being considered as obstructionist in this regard. The polls seem to be turning a little bit around. And I'm not making any predictions, because nobody in their right mind would. But I do think that it's not going to hurt the president at all, and it's not going to hurt the Democratic Party. I think that they're going to come out of this stronger.
Mm-hmm. Brian Hoffman?
Well, as far as the president's concerned, he's still attempting to do that triangulation thing to show that he's the adult in the room. And even his speech on Friday, he was trying to hit that theme. But I don't think anybody buys it anymore. After his appearance on Friday, there was this unintended consequence in that it brought Reid and Boehner together for that agreement, which subsequently was unraveled by Obama's pressure. I think that Obama will suffer for this, not much. I think, as John says, I'm going to have to agree with him. I think the Republicans may suffer more. But on the other hand, the Republicans are the party that's willing to do this again during an election year, so I'm not sure what that means. Maybe internal polling shows that the Democrats will suffer more. I don't know.
As we're approaching this August 2nd deadline, are we going to see default? Are we going to see compromise? Are we going to see the president doing something at the last minute to raise the debt ceiling? I know you don't want to predict, John Smart, but what's your best guess?
Well, I think it's kind of amusing that nobody wants to, the Republican side do not want to listen to the story that it was Bush that brought us here in the first place, but of course it's true, it was. And it's very interesting that the very people who are now standing up in Congress, except for the new crop of Tea Party members of the House, of course, but most of the people who are standing up and talking against this proposal are the ones who voted for all of the things that happened during the 8 years of the Bush administration, which essentially put us in this position now. It's important to remember the fact that Bill Clinton left us with a budget surplus that George Bush completely wiped away and sent us back into the pits. And I think we need to remember that. As I said, the Republicans keep bringing that up and saying, oh, yeah, there they go, attacking Bush again. Well, yeah, but that's how we got here. And I don't think it's going to, in the long run, hurt the president. As far as, again, predictions, I don't know. Nobody knows. But I would not be at all surprised if the president did indeed invoke the 14th Amendment and just proceed.
Mm-hmm. Brian Hoffman?
Yeah, well, I'm going to go back to Clinton and remind everybody that he had a Republican Congress and that he said the era of big government is over after the Republicans twisted his arm. So I think we can give some of the credit to the that particular balancing to the Republicans. As far as Obama's concerned, yeah, Bush did start the buildup of debt, but Obama's continued it and doubled down, so he's Bush on steroids. And as far as Republicans supporting Bush at the time, the Tea Partiers, you know, the pre-Tea Partiers, the Michelle Bachmans did not. Michelle Bachman voted against TARP, and so she's been entirely consistent, as have a lot of the Tea Partiers to their credit. My view is that a compromise will be reached probably today.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to the ongoing presidential race. And polls that came out this week showing Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani running very strong against President Obama in 2012. It is early, of course, but is it meaningful, John Smart?
No. Quite simply, it's not. At this point, the polls don't mean a thing. And it's just a question of who gets the most press coverage and who has the most name recognition. And I just don't think it matters at all, no.
Does this mean, though, that President Obama is suffering because of this this debate and the economy?
No, I don't think so. I think it simply means that everybody knows who's going to run on the Democratic ticket. The incumbent president is going to run. On the Republican side, they've got such a large collection of people who have announced or seemingly will soon announce that they're running for president. So there's a great deal more press on that. And I think that's really pretty much what the polls are referring to.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree, Brian Hoffman?
I'll give a partial agreement to that. It used to be that Republicans won in what they called a generic ballot. In other words, would you rather vote for a Republican or Obama? And the Republicans won in a generic ballot, but no specific candidates. But as you pointed out, now Romney is a specific candidate and Giuliani, as a specific candidate, are shown as beating Obama. But we've got more than a year, and a year is an eternity in politics. You know, from now, between now and next year, anything could happen. So Obama could be the most popular person in the country by the time the election rolls around.
Yeah. Former New York Governor George Pataki says he's considering running for president. Would he have a chance, John Smart?
No.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, he wasn't a very good governor to begin with, and I don't think he's got the name recognition either. It's getting a little late for somebody to jump into the race. Possibly Rick Perry in Texas could jump in because he's getting an awful lot of press and people know who he is, but George Pataki, no, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Brian Hoffman?
I don't think people are very excited about him just yet. He's kind of an unknown, as John says. I think Perry, again, as he says too, is maybe a better candidate. But I really think that the big move is going to come with Bachman, and one of the reasons that I believe that, if you look at the pressure that's beginning to hit her, you know, just subtly right now, but I think it's going to build. Right now, Romney isn't worried about her at all, and he knows that she's going to knock off some other competitors. So I think he's kind of glad to see her there. But I think he may live to regret that, the same way Hillary lived to regret letting Obama knock off the other candidates.
Mm-hmm. Turning to the economy, a report out this morning shows the economy slowed in the first 6 months of 2011 to its weakest pace since the recession ended. High gas prices and small income gains forced Americans to sharply pull back on spending. So the Commerce Department says the economy expanded only 1.3% in the April through June period. What does this mean, Brian Hoffman?
Well, I know somebody who's fairly highly placed at Ameriprise. Anyway, he said that their analysts show the market going sideways for quite a while. So I think that's about right. The things are flat.
Yeah. Are we ever going to get out of this?
I don't think Keynesian economics are going to get us out of it. I don't think government spending is going to get us out of this. No. Yeah. One of the things I did just for yucks, as I looked at the national debt and what it would mean if it was a mortgage on a $100,000 income, it'd be like buying a $488,000 house. And if you look at the stuff that's not in the debt, if you look at our other obligations, it's like buying a $1.4 million house. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Well, so John Smart, what do you make of this economy that's going sideways?
Yeah, it certainly is, but it's not just our economy; it's the whole world economy, except for the Chinese, of course, who seem to be doing just fine. But yeah, I understand the problem. And as far as Keynesian economics, it was tried by the New Deal, of course, by Franklin Roosevelt in the 30s, and it did manage to pull things together a little bit. Of course, and it's always pointed out that it was actually the Second World War that brought us out of the Great Depression in the long run. And I'm not predicting or recommending that we have a great war, but I do think that it's possible that we can turn this around, that we can do that. One of the problems is, and people bring this up all the time, economists do, is that American corporations are sitting on vast sums of capital that they're hesitant to invest in business in the United States because they want to wait until times are better. Well, at a certain point, it seems to me that they're going to have to say to themselves, I don't think it's going to happen unless we get involved and actually make it happen. And as, again, going back to that Second World War analogy, I think it's entirely possible that American business and corporations could indeed pull the country back out if they simply reinvested some of the capital that they're sitting on and developed, you know, more production and newer products and so forth and so on. They could take a lesson from Silicon Valley and see what's happening with all of that, with technology. And I believe that something like that could happen. I'm, again, not in the habit of making predictions, and I'm not going to, but I do think that there's a possibility if American business enterprises took the responsibility to do so.
Yeah, we're keeping an eye on the stock market because a lot of people are watching that. The stocks have been jumpy for several days now. The stocks were on track to post their worst weekly losses in nearly a year on Friday after data showed meager growth in the economy and the debt deal debate continues, and that's making investors nervous. There's also this story that says that this debt ceiling debate is risking a double-dip recession for the United States. Are we already, is the U.S. economy already damaged because of this, Brian Hoffman?
I think we were headed that way for a long time. I don't think that this is going to affect it one way or another. I did have a comment, though, Joe, if I could make about the 1930s with FDR. And his Keynesian economics, as John said, didn't pull us out. The war did. But actually, it caused a second depression in the Depression. There's a good book on the Depression written by Amity Schlaes called The Forgotten Man. But anyway, as far as waiting to invest until times get better, I don't think that's the case. I think they're waiting to invest because they don't know what the Obama administration is going to saddle them with or what it's going to cost. And as evidence of that, I offer Steve Wynn's comments basically saying, I got bag loads of money ready to invest if I just knew what the game was.
John Smart, do you have thoughts on whether the U.S. economy is already damaged because of this debate?
Oh, I think that's definitely so. But I would also, I know exactly what Brian is talking about in the 30s. And actually, that dip in the Great Depression coming back had to do with the fact that people persuaded FDR in 1937 that he ought to relax some of the Keynesian proposals that he had put in place. And he did. And immediately the economy turned around and started going back down into the sink. So, and he then quickly remedied that and put it back in place. But so I don't know that there's much of a lesson to be learned from that, except that maybe if you're going to try Keynesian economics, then stick to your guns and let it run its course. As far as right now and what businesses are doing, I certainly wouldn't listen to Steve Wynn as far as being an economist. And there, again, I repeat what I said before, there are a lot of industrialists who are sitting on great piles of money who could invest it in the economy, who could develop new product, who could develop new inventory, who are not doing so because they're going to wait around and see if maybe the Republicans will win and we won't get get hammered with new taxes or any new regulations or anything. And I understand that. That's fine. But I think that they need to be disabused of that idea and get back to business.
Yeah, two comments on that. One, Herbert Hoover did switch to Keynesian economics, so he was somebody else who switched, and that made the situation worse for him. So there's that. The other thing is Steve Wynn is a Harry Reid supporter. So when Steve Wynn, who's a billionaire and a business person, says that Obama's economic policies are causing him to sit on the sideline, he used the term wet blanket, to put a wet blanket on the business community. You got to give that some credibility. This is a Democrat talking, not a Republican.
We need to move on to other issues, and one comes from the U.S. Postal Service. The Postal Service announced this week that it is looking at closing 1 in 10 of its retail outlets. It's looking at more than 3,650 post offices across the country for possible closing, including 41 in Wisconsin. A reaction, John Smart?
I have a feeling I know where some of those 41 are.
Yeah, they might be in rural Wisconsin.
Probably in rural Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry about that, but I think that it's probably, everybody can understand where the problem is coming from. People are not using the U.S. mails like they used to. Now that we're living in a technological age, people are communicating in a different way. And I think that that's where it's coming from. And I suppose it's, in a sense, inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Inevitable, Brian Hoffman?
Yeah, I can't disagree with John on that, not a bit. Politicians like to do what they can for people, but the numbers just aren't there for this. So I think the closes are a fait accompli. I can't see any trouble with bipartisanship there.
One international story that we want your thoughts on before we move on to some other state issues for the rest of the program, that horrible massacre in Norway, the shooter, the bomber this week pleaded not guilty, though he admitted he did it. He said he was not guilty. He was saving Europe, he says, from a Muslim immigration. Your thoughts on the Norway tragedy, John Smart?
Well, it was indeed a tragedy. I've been to Norway. I have friends in Norway and Sweden, and they're very, very upset by all of this. And, of course, as far as the man's reasoning is concerned, I don't understand how he thought that he was going to drive the Muslims out of Europe by killing a bunch of Norwegian kids at a camp. That really doesn't make any sense at all. The man is clearly a loony. Professing guilt, or not guilty, but because he was doing this for some kind of a national interest. What is really fascinating about this story, aside from the tragedy involved, is that the world press and the world public opinion immediately jumped on this when they first heard of the bombing in Oslo and assumed that it was some kind of Muslim terrorist. And it's a sad commentary on our news media and a lot of other things that's immediately what people jump to. But it turns out that it was a homegrown terrorist who was a right-winger who professes to be an evangelical Christian yet, and that he was killing a bunch of good Norwegian kids because he wanted to get the Muslims out of Norway. That makes no sense whatsoever, of course. Mm-hmm.
Brian Hoffman?
Yeah, I agree with that. It was unfortunate that the press jumped to the conclusion. They did rectify it very quickly. Though I mean, within hours they were back to the correct story, and so that's to their credit, I guess. Although the 24-hour news cycle being what it is, they do tend to jump. One thing though that has come out that's kind of interesting: if you look at crazies in places like Norway, one of the problems that they have is that a lot of countries don't have free speech the way we do. I mean, an example of that sort of thing is Canada, where Mark Stein was hauled into court for what he said in his book called America Alone. But in any case, Canada doesn't have free speech the way we do. Norway doesn't have free speech the way we do. And it's funny because they regard themselves as fairly liberal societies, but the fact of the matter is we're the king of free speech. And I really think crazies are more likely to resort I'm not apologizing for him, for God's sakes, don't interpret it that way. But if you push people underground, they sometimes the nuts pop up.
We are reviewing the news of the week with Brian Hoffman, professor of management at UW-River Falls, faculty advisor for the UW-River Falls College Republicans, and John Smart, who is former chair of the Price County Democratic Party. We will talk about state issues, and we will have the Week in Review quiz coming up here on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. Last week on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, you may have noticed a story that we posted on deep fried butter. That's a new delicacy to be rolled out at the Wisconsin State Fair next week. This week, word came out of another deep-fried item that you'll be able to try at the fair, something you'd think wouldn't even be possible to deep-fry. What is it? 1-800-642-1234, if you think you know, want to guess. 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will give you, 5 minutes or so to call in your guesses, and we will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will be awarded the book of your choice that was featured on the program this week. What is the deep-fried delicacy that will be offered at the state fair this year? It was just announced this week. Okay, the phones are ringing off the hook. Now, time to review more news of the week with John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party, and Brian Hoffman, professor of management at UW-River Falls, faculty advisor to the UW-River Falls College Republicans. You know, we're going to talk some about the recall elections coming up in August in Wisconsin. We here at Wisconsin Public Radio held candidate forums all week long. We invited all six Republican state senators facing recall and the two remaining Democratic state senators facing a recall election and all of their challengers to join us for these half-hour forums on Wisconsin Public Radio during my program in our 7 o'clock hour and during Ben Marin's 4 o'clock hour. We had many of them. Some declined to appear, but sort of the home stretch right now. I'm just wondering, John Smart first, are you following any of these races very closely and your thoughts on what we're facing in August?
Yes, I am following them. And I think it's very interesting what's happening because the closer we get to the actual recall elections, the more things seem to be balancing out. Nancy Nussbaum and Bob Coles are now basically in a statistical dead heat. Alberta Darling is actually in trouble with Sandy Pasch. Sheila Harsdorf and Shelley Moore are kind of in, again, a statistical dead heat. Maybe Brian knows more about that than I do. Luther Olson, I don't know. He seems to be doing all right. But Randy Hopper is not, and Dan Kopanky is not. And I just heard your interview with Jim Holprin, and he handles himself extremely well. And Kim Simic has not been doing a very good job of being public about anything, so she didn't take your invitation, and she hasn't taken most others. And I know that Jim Holprin has challenged her to debate, and she won't do that either. As far as Bob Wirch, I think that case, his race seems to be doing pretty well, too. I don't know, again, I'm not in the habit of making political predictions, but I think that it's going to be a shakeup, and it's entirely possible that the state Senate will be flipped.
Do you see it the same way, Brian Hoffman?
Oh, there's a concern, that's for sure. He was speculating that I might know about the Harsdorf campaign, and of course I do. Twin Cities are closest to us, media-wise, so we get our television from Minneapolis-St. Paul. And so far, there's been $2 million $2 million spent on ads in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area for commercials that are only going to hit this part of western Wisconsin. Moore raised $237,000. Didn't run any ads in the Twin City media. They were all run by outside interests. Sheila Harsdorf raised $328,000 ran only one of the Twin City metro area ads herself. There's about 100,000 votes to be had, and based on the $2.5 million spent so far, that's about $250 per vote. So it's a serious race. I think that the money raised by Harsdorff, since it is about 50% greater than what Moore raised, and since Moore has the incensed teachers and union thugs on her side, the fact that Harsdorff raised about 50% more indicates that Harsdorff wins.
Mm-hmm. What about the other races? Are you, do you think that the Dems might be able to oust any incumbent Republicans?
Well, I'm going to go along with your caller on that. Of course, I'm more optimistic that the Republicans win, but the Dan Kopanky, that's a concern. I know Dan; he's a good guy. Sure, hope he wins. As far as District 12 is concerned, I think John might be a little bit optimistic about that. I'm not sure that Kim Simek couldn't pull off a win there. As far as he declared Harsdorff and Moore dead heat, I think a lot of people from outside of this area would think that, but I'm not, just here on the ground, I can't say I see it that way. But
mm-hmm. What, John Smart, what good does it do if Democrats do take control of the state Senate? If you're correct and that happens, what good does that do?
Well, anytime you have a divided legislature, it means that everything kind of stops dead for a while, and everything has to be passed by both houses, so it slows things down. And I think a perfect example of why the Republicans are a little nervous about this is that they're trying to push the redistricting plan through as quickly as possible so that they can get it done before, indeed, the Senate flips, because the Senate would be able to simply say, no, we're not going to take that redistricting plan that you have proposed with your highly paid lawyers. We're going to do something else. But if they can get it squeezed through before, and it looks like they will, and now they're just waiting for the governor to sign it. But that's why they were rushing so much stuff through, because they didn't know how much longer they were going to be able to control the legislature. And I think that tells you a great deal about what it would mean if indeed the Senate did flip over to Democratic control.
Mm-hmm. And your thoughts on the impact of Brian Hoffman?
I was wondering if you switched John with somebody else. I remember John being unhappy with the fact that the Senate's in U.S. Senate's in Democratic control and the House is in Republican control and things are being slowed down. Now slowing down looks like a good thing. So I guess in the state it's a good thing and the federal government's a bad thing. But as far as what it would do, yeah, it would slow things down.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that redistricting plan. Governor Walker signed one bill this week related to redistricting, but he has not signed the maps yet that were passed by the legislature, and he hasn't said when he will do that. Do you think he's going to want any changes on those, Brian Hoffman?
Well, no, what the press has been saying so far is the reason he's waiting is he wants to defer to the local officials so that the larger, like, Senate districts aren't cutting up local boundaries. So that's what he's saying. I don't like gerrymandering, no matter who does it, Republican or Democrat. I really wish that we could just do redistricting, regardless of who's in power, with some kind of in horizontal and vertical lines, and just say, that's it, and no fooling around. And, some kind of scheme that would be mutually agreeable to both parties, because I really think that this is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm. John Smart?
We might take a lesson from Iowa. They have a nonpartisan committee or commission or something set up that does the redistricting lines, and I think it might be inevitable that we're going to go in that direction, too. However, I think it's important to point out that the way that the Wisconsin system is working now, the governor just signed that bill that he did just sign, basically he's trying to take power away from local municipalities. So the logical thing to do would be for the municipalities to set their own boundary lines first, and then for the legislature to take those boundary lines and adapt that to the districts. But that's not the way they did it. They simply went ahead and pushed their own map before anybody got a chance to do anything on a local level, and that's where I think there's a problem.
on to some other issues. The State Department of Transportation is looking at closing 16 Division of Motor Vehicles, driver's licenses, and ID card locations. And there are those who are grumbling about this decision, which comes following voter ID passing in Wisconsin. What's going on here, Brian Hoffman?
Well, immediately that was demagogued. Well, of course, you're closing more of them in Republican or in Democratic districts than Republicans. So Republicans will be able to shut Democrats out at the poll as if people couldn't do this. And, of course, we talk about the infirm and can't get down to get their IDs for voting, that sort of thing. So it's pure demagoguery. The alternative is people can vote just by showing up. So at places like the University of Wisconsin-Madison, when we got a situation, the students can vote in Madison, and then they can go home on the weekend to Minnesota and Iowa and vote again. And now I know that why the Democrats would want that. It certainly helps their party. But to say that these IDs are impossible to get and that the Republicans are trying to steal elections is just nonsense. And if we ever lose control of elections, if we can't be sure who's voting, if that happens and the public becomes cynical, then look out.
You know, another state issue, the state Senate will take up unemployment benefits again next week. Both houses had voted to extend unemployment benefits, but they differed over this one-week waiting period. The assembly restored a one-week waiting period before you could get the benefits, and now it looks like the Senate might go along with that. What do you think of that, John Smart?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting, and I'm not one for conspiracy theories, but it sure sounds like one in this case. The state Senate passed that bill by a voice vote yet, and it was massively in favor of the legislation as they originally had it. And then the assembly said, no, we want to put that 1 week back in there, that 1 week delay back in there. So now the Senate would have to take it up again. And quite frankly, it seems to me that the reason that the Senate pushed that through was so that the senators, the Republican senators who are being recalled, would not have to deal with that at the polls or in their campaigns. So they can say, well, I didn't vote that way. I certainly didn't vote to add an extra week to the people who are unemployed and waiting for benefits. I wouldn't have done that. It was the assembly that did that,
Yeah.
And it just seems to me like there's some kind of a game going on here.
Brian Hoffman, very briefly, react to that story.
The one-week waiting period, one of the truisms in economics is if you subsidize something, you're going to get more of it. If you tax it, you'll get less. So as nice as it might be to eliminate the one-week waiting period, you will get higher unemployment if you eliminate it.
Well, it's time now to reveal the answer and the winner of this week's Week in Review quiz. It's the question was, what deep-fried delicacy will be available at the state fair this year? It was announced this week, and the answer is beer. How do you deep-fry beer? Well, a pretzel dough or ravioli dough is filled with Michelob Amber Bock and then fried in oil, of course. And that's the one of the many delicacies that will be available at the state fair. Also, deep-fried butter is another one. So I'm wondering, John, Brian, how much would they have to pay you to try a deep-fried beer? I guess we'll leave it hypothetical. Thanks very much to both of you for joining us.
Thank you, Joy. Thank you, Brian. Nice meeting you.
Yeah, John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party, and Brian Hoffman, who is a professor of management at UW-River Falls. Thanks to both of them for being with us. For the Week in Review, thank you too. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.